Accomplishment Coaching is proud to present the following fine programming. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach. AccomplishmentCoaching.com.
Welcome to Heart Empowered Women Radio with your host, Clarice Connolly.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Heart Empowered Women podcast. I am your hostess, Clarice Connolly, and I am a women's empowerment coach, an accountability coach, and just so excited to be a stand and support for individuals that want to have their life go a different way. And it's so amazing to be able to do that and also bring this podcast to you, because when I'm out in the world meeting new people, there are individuals that are living an empowered life. And my intention with this podcast is to show you that there are, you know, these perceived struggles and limitations and obstacles that happen in life. And we can absolutely, you know, give up and give into them and start to relate to it, or we can choose to use them as an opportunity and to bring other possibilities out in the world, not just for ourselves. But I just, so I meet these women and I have conversations, and I think that they need to be broadcasted just like from the tops of the mountains as this opportunity to bring hope or inspiration. And while these individuals that I bring, and today's guest included, may not have your exact story, but my intention is, how can you hear from where you're at in life? And maybe you haven't been with the exact situation or the same unfolding or upbringing, or maybe have gotten the same diagnosis, but how can you relate to the things that are being said and really just walk away with empowerment in your everyday life and an option to take things home with you and try them on for size? And today's guest, I'm so excited, is Lynn Delmastro Thompson. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
She is a certified body talk practitioner. She's a speaker and an author of the Amazon bestseller, You Are Not Your Diagnosis. She holds a master's degree in somatic psychology and has completed additional specialized training in biofeedback, therapeutic yoga, and Reiki. After being misdiagnosed with leukemia at the age of 25, Lynn became passionate about sharing with the world her message that just because a doctor has said an illness is chronic or incurable doesn't mean that it has to be a life sentence, and that Western medicine isn't the only approach to healing. When we explore our holistic options, true healing rather than symptom management can occur. I'm really excited. Thank you so much, Lynn, for joining us. And I really want to just jump in with, like, man, being misdiagnosed sounds insane. What has been your experience? Like, what's the, like, 10-minute version of, like, your unfolding?
Sure. So, yes, that's kind of where the big part of my story started. I was in my mid-20s, and I was in graduate school. I was pursuing a PhD in history, and I went into that program straight out of college. Looking back at it, I think I was kind of scared to be grown up and get a job. And so I went, oh, let's go to grad school. I think I want to be an academic. Like, let's just live in the ivory tower. And I was immediately miserable in that program. Like, while I had felt really excited and lit up in my undergraduate program, where I was studying history as well, as soon as I was in this graduate program, I was like, I felt like everybody around me was so happy and excited about what they were doing. And I felt like I was just miserable. And I spent several years being miserable and feeling like I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And then I started having some just kind of more mild physical symptoms, nothing related to actually what the diagnosis and the misdiagnosis was. I was getting anxiety. I was starting to have a little bit of panic attacks. I had migraine headaches as a teenager, and they kind of came back with a full force. And I kept kind of saying, I don't think I'm in the right place, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And kind of that leap into the unknown seemed really scary. So the summer of 2004, I was scheduled for elective surgery, and you know, nothing was really wrong. It was truly elective surgery. And in that process, through the pre-op blood work, that was when I was informed by the surgeon that something was wrong. He called me the night before the surgery and he said, I got your lab results and there's something that looks really off. And he sent me to have the labs done a second time, just in case there was a lab error or it was somebody else's lab. You know, let's rule that all out, make sure and confirm. And the confirmation lab was the same thing. And he said, we need to cancel the surgery. There's something going on. And of course, I had no idea. You know, it was just this phone call, like, your labs look really abnormal. Go see your regular doctor. And so I did the next day, go see my regular doctor, who, of course, ran more tests. And next thing I know, I was getting a phone call from a doctor who I had never met. And say, he said, you know, how are you doing? And I said, other than being freaked out by getting a call from, you know, a doctor who I don't know who you are and what's going on. He said, okay, well, if you don't show any symptoms tonight, you can stay home. But tomorrow I want you to come meet me at the hospital and I'm going to have you check in.
Oh, my.
And so this whole experience was very much like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, I didn't feel sick. I had no symptoms at this point. It was just something was abnormal and then getting a strange call from a gastroenterologist. So I was like, okay, well, that's a little clue of it has something to do with gastroenterology and my digestive system. And I checked in and, you know, I went through this whole process of 2 weeks in two different hospitals with lots of doctors trying to figure out what was going on. And the end result was a diagnosis of leukemia and being treated for that for 3 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And I knew in that process, the primary doctor who was treating me, the hematologist, I was very uncomfortable with him. I didn't feel like he was a good listener in any way. I would spend way more time in the waiting room waiting to see him, and he would spend less than 5 minutes in an appointment with me. He would ask questions like, oh, well, you know, how are you feeling? And I would say, I still feel really sick, because at that point, I actually did feel sick. It wasn't like the beginning of this process. And he would say, well, you look great. So I'll see you in 3 months or 2 months, whatever the follow-up was. And I was like, why are you even not listening? So the whole journey was very much, you know, one of A, realizing that I think this had happened because I was pursuing a path that wasn't for me and I wasn't listening. And my body had really been trying to get me to listen for several years through a little bit more subtle ways. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm kind of asymptomatic, but these lab results show something that would have been apparent within a week or two, that there was something wrong, because not only did they did get one of the diagnoses correct. I had clotted off the veins that drain my liver. And then they had to figure out like why that was, because that's not a normal thing. And that was the explanation they came up with, was the leukemia, which it really wasn't.
Wow.
So the journey was a very like a down a rabbit hole of, you know, going from thinking, hey, I'm 25, the world is my oyster, even though I'm kind of miserable, you know, I still have my whole life in front of me, to sitting in a hospital room and having a doctor say, you have leukemia.
Wow. Do you feel like there is this, like thing, like, what are your beliefs around this whole, like, if you're told leukemia, then you start to like, actually like, believe it, and then almost like, not create it, but make yourself sick, because you're like, oh man, I have this thing, right? Like, what are your, I don't know, right? I have no idea what the answer is, but it's almost like if someone would have told you, like, you have the plague, you just start to act like it. And then all of a sudden,
Yeah. And it's our minds are very, very powerful. One mm-hmm. of the things that fascinates me is all of these different placebo studies, mm-hmm. which show, you know, both the positive and the negative aspect of that, how when we believe that something's going to help us, even if it's a sugar, you know, it's actually in reality a sugar pill, it can help us. But on the flip side of that, you know, if we believe what a doctor says of you have this diagnosis or you only have this amount of life left to live, if you have something terminal and they say you have 3 months, a lot of people will actually die like 3 months to that day because it's like that belief I think is so strong, like, okay, mm-hmm. that's my clock now. My clock is mm-hmm. says exactly 3 months. And then the body just creates that reality to mirror kind of what we've been told and therefore what we believe.
Mm. And what's the, like, so you mentioned that you went through treatment for 3 years. Like, what at 3 years was that tipping point or that stopping point where you were like, I'm done? Or, like, how does that?
How did that part of the story? Well, the whole time I felt like I wasn't being listened to, and I felt like something was not right with that diagnosis. It never sat well with me. Mm-hmm. And I kept asking my primary doctor for a referral to a different specialist, a different hematologist, because I didn't trust this doctor who, as I mentioned, would never spend any time with me, would never really listen to what I was saying. It was just like, oh, I'm just going to ask the obligatory question, how are you feeling? I don't really care what your answer is. And because I was still in graduate school and trying to kind of work my way out of that and work my way out of it and find a path to still have health insurance, because that's, of course, important when mm-hmm. you're really sick, I was kind of stuck for a couple years because my primary doctor kept saying, oh, this guy is great. I went to medical school with him. You know, there's nobody better in town. And then as soon as I left that program and I got a different primary doctor, I asked for a referral. And I got one. I got a referral to a different doctor. And as soon as that doctor looked at the paperwork, I had brought probably a stack. It was about 2 or 3 inches of lab results and all the diagnostic tests from the past 3 years. And he looked at it and he was like, I don't think this is what they said it was. And it was, that moment was, you know, tremendous relief and yet a shock at the same time.
Mm. Did you ever want to, like, seek, I don't want to say retaliation, but sort of this, like, I would be so, like, vengeful. I would be like wanting to do some sort of I keep saying retaliation, but how did that experience come from you? Like, I would be mad and be like,
oh, I was. Yeah. And I went through a medical malpractice suit, and it was less for me, of course, about money and more about, I never want this to happen to anybody else. Because, you know, like, you could give me a dollar and they could be held accountable, and that would be worth more than, you know, $1 million.
Right.
Of course, the justice system isn't always the easiest for medical malpractice. And my case ended up being a hung jury. And my only mm-hmm. recourse in that situation was they said, you have to, if you want to proceed, we have to retry the case and we have to start again tomorrow. And I had already been through two weeks of trial. And I went, you know, and it was also expensive to go through it because you have to pay for your own experts and stuff like that. And my parents and I just decided this, you know, we could just end up in the same situation, go through this for another 2 weeks, spend a bunch more money, and then just be like, yeah, it's another hung jury.
So then what do you do? Right. Like, I'm thinking of, like, the stages of grief, right? There's sort of this, like, I'm clearly very set on the anger part.
Yes.
But I imagine, right, where does the progression and the series go for you?
It was definitely also finding support and helping to process that. So even during the process of before the correct diagnosis was found, I was going to therapy to deal with just grief over feeling like I had, my life had completely changed and that certain things had been taken away, you know, certain possibilities for me. And definitely that was something that had to continue after going through all of that and going through a medical malpractice case that didn't end in the result that I was hoping it would. Because there was a lot of anger, but there also was, you know, sadness and grief and a feeling of loss. And it was good also at that point. I think I moved away from, I was living in California when all this happened. And I, within about a year, I moved. So it was nice not to be in that same place and see all of the places that kind of represented that period of time in my life and the reminder.
That's so awesome. Yeah, good. So what would you say was the type of support that you, or could you share with us about the type of support that you got to transition you out of that kind of life experience?
Sure. So while I, about a year into the process, or after the initial diagnosis, I actually started exploring a lot of holistic healing modalities, because I felt like I wasn't really happy with just the idea of, let me just take this pill and just live with this as my permanent reality. So that was where I started. I had gone back to biofeedback, which was something I started when I was about 12 or 13 and was getting bad migraines. And I went back to that to help deal with a lot of anxiety.
And how do you explain biofeedback for those that, and I don't even know that I know, maybe I do know, but there's so many forms, right?
Yeah. So biofeedback, in this sense, I was going for what is called kind of like a traditional peripheral biofeedback. You're basically hooked up to different sensors that measure things like your heart rate, your respiration rate, your skin temperature, and all of that information is fed into a computer in real time. So you're sitting there in an appointment and you can actually see what's going on with your heart rate. How are you breathing? You know, are you not breathing at all? Are you breathing really quickly? And then the therapist actually works with you to learn how to regulate some of those things. So it's really cool because it's, again, it's that power of being aware of something and then learning how can I have some control over this? Like we all think, oh, I don't really have any control over my heart rate. But through our breathing, we actually can start to regulate the heart rate.
Whoa, that's awesome. That's really neat. Cool.
Yeah.
So you went and started doing some biofeedback. Anything else that you were working on or getting supported around?
I was in therapy at that time. Part of the story actually was about a year and change after my diagnosis, my best friend passed away very suddenly. So I was hit with this kind of other major loss and life-changing event. And so I was working very hard to kind of process a lot of grief over that experience and over my own situation and health issues. And that therapist had said, you know, there's this yoga class, it's called Yoga for Healing. And I really have heard good things and you should go try it. And I was like, what? Like, you mean there's a class that's like yoga and it's not, because the only exposure at that point in my life I had was taking a class at a gym, which is a very different type of
very
yoga.
Incredibly different. Yeah. For someone who's also experienced that.
And I was like, so they're not going to make me stand on my head. And I'm, you know, like, I don't know, you know, because obviously at that point I was ill and I didn't feel well. And I didn't have a lot of strength. And I thought, you're telling me to go to yoga. And she's like, no, this is totally different. You should like check this out. And I went and I was like, oh, this is different. And it's amazing. And so that became part of my care process was going to that class a couple times a week with just a beautiful instructor. And then I got curious about acupuncture. And I just, at that point, I call it like the buffet of holistic healing options. I was like,
Totally. Right. Like, I love that. And I think that that's why when we connected around your story, I was like, yes, more people need to hear this. Right. Because I'm originally from the East Coast, you know, yoga shmoga would have been really the response I would have had, you know, and maybe I went to a gym, LA Fitness, and had like a somewhat sort of similar to yoga, experience. And, I love that, right? Like, I think that that really is important, that there's so many different types of yoga, right? Like, mm-hmm. I want to like always emphasize the, like, yes, you can continue to roll your eyes, but like, give it a couple shots, right? It's not just like the LA Fitness yoga, but maybe go to a boutique yoga place, maybe go to a, you know, outdoor yoga experience, and, you know, really kind of be open to the varieties that are available. Right. And I love the, you know, that willingness or that curiosity to kind of find that there are multiple modalities, right? Like, I think that it's so ingrained in our culture in the United States to go to a regular practitioner, right? Like, is that Eastern medicine? I always get that confused. Anyway, but it's like, you know, I always think about how, you know, my own personal experience has very much been like, oh, you have digestive issues. Maybe it's, you know, an allergy test, and I get the allergy test and they're like, no, you're not allergic to these things that I haven't eaten in years. Right. So how do they know? And it's like, oh no, you're fine. And I'm like, no, but really, I eat these dairy things and these gluten things, and they're, you know, soy, corn, all of that. And then you kind of go to a digestive place. They're like, oh, okay, fine. Well, here, if you want to spend the money, go to the endocrinologist, the, you know, digestive issue people. And, just kind of being like, well, unless you want an endoscopy, it's probably just irritable bowel, right? It's super, super easy to just slap this thing on as a band-aid of like, and it's crazy, right? In my life experience, it's very much like, here, we'll prescribe you this medicine that we give to people that are depressed. But in low dose, 10 milligrams will actually help you move things around. It's like, wait, what? You're giving me a pharmaceutical medicine that's for your mind that's somehow going to loosen my bowels, but also like really chemically messed with me. Like, I felt almost depressive. Mm-hmm. And this is so minor in comparison, right, to your like experience you just explained to me. But there's this like, you can choose to follow this one doctor, or you can ask multiple doctors. Like, I then went to a reflexologist and a couple other healing practitioners that were kind of like, no, you just have low stomach acid. Here's all the pinch tests I've done, and take this thing. And you're like, whoa, I can digest food now. Right. Like, yes. And it's so wild to hear the extent of which you had to go and that you've experienced to like learn to like, I mean, I guess listen to yourself and find your own sort of healing modalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely been a big journey through, you know, finding what works for me. And I always like to emphasize to people too, it's like, there's so many healing approaches out there. And that's because maybe not everyone is right for everybody at every time. Mm-hmm. And so there were probably things that I tried that I don't even really consciously remember a whole lot about, because it's like, I tried it and I was like, yeah, that's, I don't think this is what I need right now. But it's nice to know that we can keep exploring things, and that there are so many more options than just the pharmaceutical route of, you know, here's a pill for that. And, you know, sometimes you read the side effects on those things and you think, that sounds worse than the problem that I'm taking this for.
Right. And, you know, look, I want the listener to be like, you know, maybe it isn't, that you've been diagnosed with something like, you know, severe, life-threatening, or whether, you know, you're facing digestive issues, or, and I mean, even I have a 7-year-old French bulldog that has, a doctor on the East Coast was like, his vertebrae is fused together. Here's these painkillers. This is what his life's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And talking to a chiropractor on the West Coast and being like, can you adjust dogs? And they're like, yeah, that's just like humans. Humans have that too. And you just adjust them and have them move more and kind of like this rehab. And it's like CBD oil versus painkillers that are eventually going to shoot this dog's liver. So whether it's your dog or your animals or yourself, you know, how can you hear yourself in what we're talking about and see that there are, you know, other options out there, and it may not be the next doctor or the third doctor or maybe even the fourth one that you go to that, you know, really you get to say what goes and what will you choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's to me so important. And I always emphasize this with clients is it's like you're the one that's in charge of your healthcare, you know, no matter whether you're dealing with a little issue or a big issue. Like if you're not satisfied with that doctor, if they don't spend time with you, if they won't answer your questions, if they brush off your concerns, then go find somebody else. You know, it can be complicated because of insurance things and, you know, getting referrals, but it's a battle well worth fighting, as my story illustrates, because, you know, had I stuck with that doctor for somehow the rest of my life or for years, who knows? I could have still been being treated for the wrong thing.
What do you think would have happened if you would have continued to be treated for the wrong thing? Like, what would have been the like cost or the impact of doing it?
Well, not being treated for really the right thing would have been huge. I mean, as soon as I started getting treatment for the right thing, my energy level started to come back. My body stopped. I was actually very underweight after about a year. And my body was just wasting. It wasn't that I wasn't eating. It was just everything I ate just burned right off. So I think if I had stuck with that, you know, and then I was taking a medication that was relatively new. It was designed to target a particular genetic issue. And I didn't really have that genetic issue. So it's like, who knows? Like, that's the scary part. I always look at that and I try not to focus on it too much because... Right. Like, who knows what impact just 3 years on that had on my body. But who knows how long I would have survived really.
I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds like, and my experience is mostly with cancer, right? But are you getting the equivalent of like cancer treatments for leukemia? Like they're just pumping you full of all these chemicals to help blast whatever kind of infection you're having from the leukemia?
It wasn't the same as chemo.
I thought so.
Yeah, because it was a specific type of leukemia, they treated it with it was an oral medication, which when I first heard that, I was very grateful because I was terrified of the idea of having to go through chemo and all of that. Like, that was pretty much my worst nightmare. But at the same time, you know, it still was a medication that brought a lot of nausea and stuff. So I know it was hard on my body.
Yeah. Amazing. So I just like, I know that there becomes this sort of like the doctor tells you, you need to take this. You then like believe that you have to take it. And then it sort of becomes this like, I must be on this because this is the thing. This is what shall be. And this is what I was told will work.
Yes.
And I can only imagine like the internal confliction of like, but my body says maybe not. And, but this doctor who knows more than me says this shall be.
Right. And I've gone through that process now with a correct diagnosis of a doctor wanting to put me on a different medication, like a newer medication. And my intuition kept saying, now stick with the thing that you're using right now. And she kept kind of trying to push it. And I was like, no, I'm stable. I'm like, everything is going well. I just don't want to try this medication. And I've stuck with my guns and I'm just not, you know, like I said, unless something changes, this is my decision. And it can be hard. It can be hard to be in that place because it can be really scary. And actually, it just popped to mind. I was having this conversation with a colleague yesterday, and she said there's actually studies out there that say when you're in a doctor's office, you actually go into a hypnotic state. Like, it's not them actually, like, you know, sitting there hypnotizing you, but you do go into a hypnotic state. And so whatever they say with the medication, it is, we're suggestible to, oh, I need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Because they know more, right? There's this, like, they've been to school for 10 years on this. Yeah. They know my body better than me.
Yep. And yet you're the one that lives in it 24/7. You're the one that's, you know, been in it your whole life. And so there's some value in that too. You know, yes, they've gone to medical school, but there's also things that, you know, medical doctors don't know. Like, we don't understand everything about the body yet because our bodies are so complicated.
So complex. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm so excited for the second half of this podcast because I want to jump into more about what you're doing about it, more about how you're helping others, you know, this journey. And again, for those that are listening, you know, how have you been so quick to trust a doctor over trusting yourself? And how can you hear yourself? And maybe you haven't been diagnosed with leukemia or irritable bowel or, you know, whatever it is, but how can you challenge to really know yourself and trust that you do and seek other support out there for your health and well-being. So tune in and we'll jump into that next. Cool. So he's going to cut this part out here. Do you need anything? Do you have any questions?
I don't think so. Hopefully, I think I got rid of the frog in my throat. Sometimes I get that in the morning. It's like a little allergy thing.
I was totally going to jump in and be like, hey, we can cut this part out if you just need to cough it out for like 10 minutes. Or like, but I was like, you kind of cleared it up in shorter minutes than I could respond. So I was like, I think it'll be fine. And if there are a moment, a pause, he can snip, snip. It's totally good.
I just always hate it when it happens. I'm like, I know. Don't do that to me. I'm talking.
So good. Okay. So I feel like sharing your story is super big. That was good. I'm like so grateful that you've turned it around. What do you think are other points that you think would be super important to like touch on? Cause I want to talk about, you know, your experience. Then you wrote a book. Now you're helping clients. So I want to bring that forward to anything else that you want to, that you think it's important to mention?
Maybe kind of coming back to that power of the mind when we touched on the placebo, but maybe like a little bit, there's other little kind of cool things that we could chat about in that area.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Yes. Let's start there.
Okay, cool.
All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Okay. So we'll start there. And then maybe when he gives about the 10 minute mark, we'll start talking about, you know, like your work and things, or it's fine. It'll just jive.
Okay.
Takeaways will be the best part. Okay. So, I'm just going to jump back in and reintroduce the episode. Oh, website. Do you have a website we can send people? Oh, you sent it to me.
Yeah.
HeartFireHealingLLC.
Yep. .com. Unfortunately, somebody else has Heartfire Healing.
Those son of a guns.
Yeah.
Certified body talk practitioner, speaker, and author of. Okay. And it's Del Mastro Thompson, right?
Yes.
Great. I like wondered if I butchered that or not. Okay. Cool. All right. Hello, and welcome back to the second part of our episode with Lynn Del Mastro Thompson. She's a certified body talk practitioner, speaker, and author of Amazon's bestseller, You Are Not Your Diagnosis. And if you want to find more about her, she is findable on the internet at heartfirehealingllc.com. Welcome back to the mic, Lynn.
Thanks for having me.
So gosh, we first part of the episode, we really talked about being misdiagnosed at 25 of leukemia and the journey through that diagnosis and into holistic treatments. And, you know, we touched on a piece I think that's really important that we talked about circling back to is really the power of your mind inside of all of this. Mm-hmm. And what did you learn in this journey for yourself about, you know, just how powerful the mind is?
So interestingly enough, like as a kid, I remember my mom, when I started getting migraines, she would say to me, "Your mind is so powerful," because I used to be able to, when I would get really stressed out, I would actually create a migraine for myself, not mm-hmm. because I actually wanted one, but because it was, you know, it's like if I got so freaked out, that's what would happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she would always say to me, like, if only you could learn how to master that power for the positive. And that kind of always stuck with me. And then kind of through this experience in my 20s, I did realize just how powerful my mind was, and that, you know, certain times I could make myself feel sick as an excuse to get out of things, or, you know, it's like sometimes it just feels easier not to feel well rather than to say, I really don't want to do that. Mm. So there's kind of a awareness that we all kind of have that power of using our minds to control our bodies. Our bodies really will respond to the thoughts that we think on a daily basis. And if we're thinking things like, you know, I'm sick and I feel horrible and I'm never going to get any better, well, then our body's going to help create that reality for us. Mm-hmm. And if we flip that and we start thinking, you know, and depends on where your starting point is. You may not be able to go straight to my body is amazing. And, you know, like, it's a miracle. Like I, at 25, 26, that was not a thought that I could get to easily. Mm-hmm. But sometimes finding those little baby steps of, you know, my body feels a little bit better each day. Like I feel healing happening in small ways. You know, if you're generally healthy, you may be able to get to that point pretty easily of, you know, my body is resilient and continues to heal and thrive and do that. But find the approach too that's like doable from where you're starting. Because if your thoughts are just negative all the time, you're going to go, that's bullshit. You know?
Right. No way can I do that. And I love that too, right? Because it's kind of like, I always, when you were talking about weight, right, it's kind of like, I can never lose weight. And then that just becomes your story. And then you're like, I never lose weight. And then you never do, right? Because that's your belief, is that you're telling yourself that you can't. So your body's like, oh, okay, don't lose weight. Got it. Thanks.
Right. Like, yeah, keep up the good work. Just hold on to that weight.
You're doing good. You're doing good. So I love that, right? So I assume, you know, you're a body talk practitioner. Is that a lot of what that means, is just talking to your body and saying
yes? Yeah. So body talk is actually like a facilitated healing process. So it's based on the idea that our bodies are always communicating to us. I always like to say to people, our bodies don't have words. They can't say, you know, excuse me, like you're eating dairy doesn't really do well for me.
Mine screams out at me all the time. It just screams.
Yeah, it screams, but usually not in words, right?
Nope.
It just screams in like pain. And that's, you know, so that's kind of remembering that when we have a symptom, it's like, okay, this is actually the only way my body can tell me something. And in the process with body talk, we're really getting into, okay, well, what is the body trying to say through, you know, whether it be a minor symptom, like, you know, I have a little bit of back pain, or a major issue like a chronic illness, what is the body actually trying to communicate? And as we unravel that story in a session, and that's kind of the job of a practitioner, is to just listen to the body. And most people go, well, am I talking? Is it like talk therapy? It's not. It's a more quiet, intuitive process where I'm tuning in to the person's body's wisdom rather than what their brain would want to tell me, you know, through their words. And
that's super specific. I want to like underline that. Like our mind wants to tell a whole bunch of things, all the things, probably mostly negative, but the body has its own way. Thank you. That's eloquently said and so perfect. Just so you know, in case you're wondering, but go ahead.
So it's beautiful to tune in. I mean, my entry into Body Talk came kind of well after my diagnosis. And about 5 years ago, I started just having this pain in my knee. And it came out of nowhere. It wasn't like I had fallen or injured myself or banged into something really hard. It was just like I woke up one day and my left knee was very painful. And I tried all of the holistic things. I was already in that boat. I was like, if I go to a doctor, they're probably just going to give me some sort of a painkiller. And I don't really want to do that. Like, I already knew that it was something different than just take a painkiller and make it quiet. And after about 3 months of trying all the other things that I knew of that were holistic, like chiropractic, yoga, acupuncture, all of those things, I remembered the year before I had met this woman who said, I'm a Body Talk practitioner. I was out networking and I was like, Body Talk? I've never heard of that, but it sounds kind of cool. And she told me a little bit about it and I was like, cool. But, you know, I had like 5 other things that I did for self-care and I didn't really feel like I needed to try it. Well, after a couple months of this pain and after telling people that I feel like my knee is like talking, but it speaks some foreign language that I don't seem to understand. I went and I tried a session, and in that session, she shifted the pain in one session because she helped me understand. She said, did you go through a trauma right before this happened? And I went, and then it was like the light bulb came on because I wouldn't have thought that before that session. And then I realized, yeah, I did, because my parents had come to visit and my dad was going through a health crisis. And I had just spent 2 weeks dealing with him, kind of going to OHSU here in Portland and, you know, in and out of inpatient care. And then I just jumped back into work. You know, it was like, okay, I've taken 2 weeks from my business because I need to be there for my family. And then I'm like, okay, time to get work done, right? Mm-hmm. And my body was like, excuse me, you didn't process what just happened.
Yeah.
And the pain was like my signal, you know, it's like, let me just put this thing here in your knee to get you to pay attention to there's some healing work to be done.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. And again, like anybody who's listening, what kind of pain or thing in your body are you ignoring? And like, what could it be possibly trying to tell you?
Mm-hmm. And that's a process I always like to just kind of tell people. You can, you know, you don't have to always start out by going to a practitioner. You can just get quiet, you know, like kind of like you're meditating almost, and then ask that area of your body, like, hey, what are you trying to tell me? Like, what's your message here? And, you know, especially if you're somewhat more in tune with your body or you've already got some skills around like quieting your mind a little bit, you might get the hit of, oh, this is this. Sometimes you might not. Sometimes that's where, you know, having somebody kind of be your neutral third party observer is beneficial.
Right. Totally.
But it's empowering to start there and to start from that place of not getting mad at it, not being like, shut up. Like, I don't want to hear your message.
Right. And I think too, like, man, honestly, before I moved to the West Coast and, you know, this is kind of where I gained more experience with like holistic modalities. I was a pill popper. Like, I was like, oh, I have a headache, ibuprofen. Oh, anything else in my body hurts, ibuprofen. Right. Oh, I have gas X, right? Like, I just, any kind of fix, any kind of quick fix I could take a pill for, like, that was my approach. Like, I was all about finding my Band-Aids.
Right.
Like, where
we're conditioned to do that, you know? Like,
where are my lactose pills? Where do I get those things? You know, and like, I really want to challenge, because I love what you're saying is like, you know, what is it pointing to? And we can't necessarily listen if our automatic is to throw pills in our mouth to, you know, temporarily remedy whatever it may be.
Right.
And you know, if you're rolling your eyes listening to this whole conversation, right? Like, how can you meet yourself where it's at? Maybe you can't quiet your mind or you're not open to meditation, but can you journal about it? Can you start to write things down? Maybe you don't have a journal. Find a blank piece of paper, you know, like ask like on this paper and just free flow or whatever. So I love that. Thank you so much for highlighting that piece. I think that's huge. And we're so trained to be so automatic, to just hurry up and take a quick fix. You know, your book is You Are Not Your Diagnosis. How do you support people in kind of, you know, reframing their mind, or what's the process in not relating to yourself as your diagnosis?
It's definitely, there's a lot of layers to it, but, you know, looking at your identity as, you know, you are not just the thing a doctor says that you have. Like, you are a human being. You have probably, you know, we could list off at least 20 other things that you are. And yet, you know, there's very much this process of, especially with a more major diagnosis, you hear that and then you're like, oh, I have cancer, you know, now I'm a cancer patient, or, you know, and then people, even in that point of afterwards, it's like, I'm a cancer survivor. That becomes an identity. Mm-hmm. And it becomes kind of locked in. And so one of the things that I talk about in the book is even just the language that we use. And this is always a tricky one, and I haven't figured out, how do you talk about it without, like, using the identifier with it? Because it's there's no short way of saying, you know, like, I currently live with blah, blah, blah. But a lot of people, and I catch myself saying it sometimes too, I have this, I am that. And those are very powerful, you know, identifiers of I am, you know, a cancer survivor.
Totally. Yeah. And I love that too, because and this is kind of where our paths cross as well. Being diagnosed with herpes, all of a sudden you're like, it's herpes is one thing, but then the shame and stigma is the other. So it's like, herpes is no different than an eczema or, you know, whatever kind of skin condition. And it's just something people have, right?
Right.
But when you have this, like, diagnosis and you relate to yourself as it, it's kind of like you just feel dirty and disgusting and like a leper, right? And ashamed and, you know, unlovable and unwanted. And it's like it really takes over your entire existence if you let it.
Yep. And then it can very much be too, it feels like other people start seeing you that way. I mean, in my story, and I go into this piece of the story in the book in a lot of detail, you know, coming back from getting that diagnosis initially and having to tell people, like, who knew, you know, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And of course, everyone is concerned. And what happened, you know, like, what did they find? And telling people that, and then you feel like you become identified by other people as that too. You know, you are, oh, you know, she has leukemia. Uh-oh, you know, like, yeah. we better be gentle with her, you know, we better check in on her. And, you know, I felt like a lot of conversations then became revolved around, how are you feeling? Like, what's going on? Do you need anything? And I felt like I became that, just a sick person, instead of, you know, I'm Lynn and I'm a student and I'm a friend and, you know, I'm a dancer and, like, all the other things that I felt like I was and identified with, they just kind of almost disappeared.
Totally. And I can relate, right? The same thing. It's like, you know, once you tell a few friends that you've contracted this STI, it's kind of like, oh, how's your dating life? You know, like, it's like, hi, no different than anybody else's now, because I've done all the personal work and the healing. And, you know, I choose to be shameless about sharing my story. And then right. It's, oh, yeah, I got it. So then people just stop asking, like, the immediate response is, how's your dating life? You know, and then when you see and you don't relate to it as this big deal, it's just like, oh, has everything else in life too. So I love that. Like, thanks for bringing light to that. And, you know, I think the important part is to just be like, hey, we don't actually only have to talk about my diagnosis.
Exactly. And that's one thing I didn't realize in my early 20s was, you know, like, I had a right to say, hey, I'd love to talk about how you're doing, or I'd love to talk about that trip that I'm going to take, you know, even though I'm not feeling well. I don't want to focus everything on this one thing. I just felt like, oh, people were concerned and I had to answer their questions. And, you know, that would be rude not to.
Right. And I love that. So it's kind of like, you know, for whoever's listening, like, where are you And how are you enrolling your friends, right? Like, are you the person that's like, oh my God, I got this STI. Now what is my life going to be like? I'm never going to be able to find anyone. I'm never going to be able to date, and then no one's going to want me, right? So now they all feel like you're this infectious, sad person who's going to have a hard time forever dating, right? Like, that's who they're now relating to you as, you know? Are you coming to them like, I'm so sick and I'm so this and, you know, whatever, and life is only about leukemia, you know, that they only talk to you about that. They only relate to you as that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I love the like piece that you mentioned is that in your early 20s, like, this is a process. This isn't like you get a diagnosis and the next day you change your world to be more positive, right? Like, go with the feeling, the journey, the experience, but also don't get stuck.
Right. Yeah. And feel the feelings that come with different things, because nobody has ever really helped by just like denying and suppressing everything. Right. Like, that doesn't help our health and well-being either, to just say, oh, you know, I'm not angry, or I'm not going to look at the fact that I'm angry or I'm sad or I'm grieving. It's like, feel it, let it happen. But then, you know, try to move through it. And if you can't, then that's where support can be so helpful, because sometimes we do get stuck in that emotion or that trauma, and we need somebody to kind of professionally come in and like, okay, here's how we can work through that grief or that anger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you were to kind of give it a timeline, right? Like, I think that that's, and this isn't like I'm asking the question for people to compare, right? But to kind of give this like practical, like, I got diagnosed with herpes. I sat for a year in total avoidance. Like, don't think about it. Don't look at it. Don't talk about it. Nothing, right? Like, and then it took me a good solid 4 or 5 years of multiple therapists and practitioners and healing modalities to get to the point where I can openly talk about it. So I want to kind of give that as a frame of reference to kind of bring this like practicality back to it. Like, it takes time. Like, what was your experience of like timeline wise from when you were diagnosed? I know you were taking treatment for 3 years to really get back on top.
Yeah, well, I think in that initial diagnosis, the first year, I can relate to kind of what you're saying, being a little bit in avoidance, although it was hard to be completely in avoidance because I had all these appointments. But I was like, kind of like, okay, I'm just like trying to get my life back on track. And then for me, my friend passing was like a huge blow. And it sunk me kind of to the deepest and darkest place of the whole experience, where I was extremely depressed and kind of almost suicidal at one point. But then it was through that experience that I realized, oh, I don't want to die, but I don't know how to live through this. And so probably I would say there were probably at least 3 years of pretty intensive healing from 2005 on. And, you know, and then probably feeling like I had kind of moved through a lot of that. And that was when I started getting more inspired to, you know, as I heal, like, I don't believe that this just happened to me for no reason and that it can't serve a greater purpose. And that was when I got passionate about how can I use what I've learned to help other people.
I love that, too, because I know that there's this notion that you have to be the expert in your field to start helping people. But it's really like, even if you're 5, 10, 15 steps ahead of the person you're helping, like, there's so much relatability in having gone and experienced these things yourselves and done the healing to work through it. And so you work with one-on-one clients, you've been doing it for the past 8 years. And I mean, at this point, what, you had to have helped like hundreds of women. Like, can you explain, you know, how they're reclaiming their lives and really just kind of helping themselves after receiving sort of life-changing diagnoses.
Sure. So one of the coolest things I see, and it's not with every client, but I've seen a lot of clients either be able to go off of a lot of medications or significantly decrease their medications. It's so amazing to see people going from thinking, I have this illness. Often I work a lot with autoimmune. The doctor says I'm going to be dependent on this medication for my whole life. And then they find that, you know, through supporting their body and healing, they don't necessarily need it. And I never would say just go off the medication without support. Like that's not my scope of practice to titrate somebody off of medication, but it's like, I've seen it successfully happen and a lot more empowerment for these clients. I have a client who recently was going through a couple surgeries. She deals with seizures and they were taking out the small part of her brain. They mapped it where the seizures were occurring so that hopefully she will be able to eventually not have seizures anymore or have them be significantly less intense. And she shared with me that before the surgery, her doctor was kind of a little bit condescending, a little bit dismissive, didn't want to answer all her questions. And she said, and afterwards, like I was in the hospital and she actually apologized to me. And so I really love supporting people and being empowered to like stand up. And she didn't take that, you know, like the doctor kind of being rude and condescending. She was like, I have a right to ask these questions. Like, I'm going to have major surgery. This is my right. And to see that and then see the mirroring back of the doctor, actually, I was surprised that she got an apology because my experience has been very few doctors will apologize in those sorts of circumstances. It's just so beautiful to see people going from thinking that this diagnosis means my life is over, I'm going to be dependent on medications, I'm going to feel crappy my whole life, to like seeing that they can have a greater quality of life and in some cases, you know, completely release whatever the illness is.
I love that. And I think that that was really my entire intention, is to hear that there is possibility inside of this. And, you know, maybe you're at the beginning part of the journey, maybe you're in the middle or towards the end, but how can you hear like all the possibility that's in this conversation? You know, it's, if you choose to, you can turn around and help others after you've helped yourself. You know, if you choose to, you can ask for better or new support, or, you know, express yourself and voice your concerns and feelings and be heard and seen. And I think that that's so important. Thank you so much for sharing that. And just feel so touched. So we can find you by going on Amazon and downloading your book, You're Not Your Diagnosis. You work with individuals on a one-on-one basis.
I love supporting people one-on-one. It's just so powerful because we can really get to each person's unique root of the issue.
And you work with them through body talk and a little bit of sort of like the Reiki, yoga, biofeedback, like experience that you have been trained in?
The other tools I don't use nearly as much unless it comes up. So I primarily use body talk, and I actually recently also trained in a particular style of breath work. So I'm using that with people as well.
Awesome. And if you're interested in working with her, talking or connecting, you know, she's also has a website, heartfirehealingllc.com. So please go check that out. What would you say is something, you know, whoever's been listening, whether they've been diagnosed, whether their friend has been diagnosed, you know, whether it's their dog, right? Like, what's something that we could start practicing to really meet ourselves where we're at and have that like baby step of hope and practice and possibility to have this go slightly different?
I think, you know, taking a baby step of thinking, you know, how would I rather feel, or what sort of thought would I rather think? Like, and those can actually go kind of hand in hand, because that's what a lot of with talking about manifestation really talk about, kind of coupling the two. So how would I rather feel, be it, you know, I'm dealing with a big health issue, or I'm, you know, just dealing with a smaller health issue. And that's a tool you could even offer someone if you're not currently struggling with anything. Mm-hmm. Like if you have someone in your life, you know, what would it look like to have things be a little bit better if it's hard for you to go all the way to the end of, you know, I'm completely healed and my life is amazing. It's like, maybe, you know, I wake up tomorrow and I have like a little bit more energy and I can do one thing that I couldn't do yesterday because I was too tired or I had too much pain. Mm.
I love that. And it's, and I always say this and, you know, maybe each episode, but it's kind of like, how can you choose a winnable game? You know, mm-hmm. It's not like I got diagnosed with leukemia and I'm going to run a race by the end of the week. It's like, I'm going to like walk from my back bedroom to my front living room this week, like one time.
Yeah, not feel exhausted by that process by the end of the week. And then how will I feel? How will I feel when that happens? You know, can I have a little bit of excitement? Can I have a little bit of gratitude? Can, you know, what will that feel like to have just that small win? And of course, you know, if you can't get in that space of visualizing the bigger picture as well, that's really powerful too. If, you know, like visualizing your body completely healed and your life, living the life that you really want. And then how does that feel?
Yeah, I love that. Thanks so much for breaking that down. Because I know, again, I even in my own resistance, I'm like, manifestation doesn't work. Right? Like, and what we forget and what I forget in those moments of frustration is that it's all about practice. Mm-hmm. It's not like, hi, I should be manifesting for 2 hours a day. It's like, hi, how can I manifest for 2 minutes a day? And then next week, maybe it's 5 minutes a day, right? Like, and the week after that, maybe it's 10 minutes a day. And so it's really, we forget because we're so trained in the society to be so instant gratification that this is kind of us like unlearning that. And really, how do we meet ourselves where we're at and learn and check back into, you know, what is trying to be said? What do we actually need? And what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So make it doable for yourself is one of the things I like to say, because baby steps are so much less overwhelming than, you know, and it'll help move through some resistance of, you know, you saying, oh, well, that's just not possible. I'm you know, sick with this illness that the doctor says is never going to go away. And you're saying I'm supposed to imagine, you know, that I'm completely healed and I might as well be imagine riding a unicorn through the sky because it's not that likely.
Right. And look, like, I love it too. I think that that's like, thanks for bringing the humanity into all of this. I think, you know, if you're trained by, you know, I mean, this is like coaching thought perspective, but it's kind of like if you were raised in a house full of negative people, you were modeled how to be negative. You adopted like being a negative person and seeing things negatively. And, you know, if you've been doing this 20, 30, 40 years, and holding this expectation that you're going to be positive all of a sudden one day, flash tomorrow, right? Like it's going to take some practice and it's going to take, you know, some commitment and meeting, you know, slowly building this. And it is possible just to practice manifesting that. So yes, thank you. Thank you for that reminder. And gosh, we've gone through so much. It's just been really great. There's probably about a 1 minute left. Is there anything else that you know, want to wrap this up with, a parting thought or anything that's really standing out for you?
I think that kind of was wrapped up there and just that end of like, you know, just take those little steps, shift your mindset, you know, shift how can you feel in a different state. Cause that's also so powerful, is if we're in that space of like negative energy and feeling negative feelings, how can we find some gratitude?
Yes, gratitude, writing those down is huge fun. Telling a friend, you know, if you want to practice being more positive or more, you know, more in some gratitude, ask a friend to join you. You know, have that accountability and don't practice alone.
Yeah. It's always nice to have somebody or somebodies. It doesn't have to just be one person who you're doing kind of a similar thing together.
There's no right way to do this. Awesome. So again, we've been talking to Lynn Del Mastro Thompson, and you can find her at heartfirehealingllc.com. I'm Clarice Connolly. You can find me at empoweringwomen.coach. It's been an excellent hour. Thank you so much for listening and giving yourself this opportunity and the gift and all the wisdom that's been shared today. Please meet yourself where you're at, practice what you can, stretch yourself a little bit, and remember that you aren't your diagnosis.